You're listening to Super Action Bros, a podcast. We talk about movies with space raccoons and also space trees.
And feels. Dad feels. Space so many dads, dad feels.
Space pals,
space dads.
Space sisters.
Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Just everything you like, but with the word space in front of it. Space music.
Yep.
Space moms.
What was the moral that somebody told me that music solves daddy issues? That's the theme of this movie.
Yeah, I mean,
thanks to the Zune.
It also is the cause of daddy issues.
That's true. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Super Action Bros.
I'm Ryan
and I'm Ian. Welcome to the second to last episode of SAB MCU.
The penultimate episode.
Yes, where we talk about the second movie in the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I have to say it correctly. It's not 2. It's Volume 2.
Because like the tape.
Cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the second Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right. So before we get into that, though, a couple things to let you guys know about. We're almost done with SAB MCU.
That's unbelievable.
Believe it or not, we just under the wire, thanks to digital releases, are going to include the most recent MCU movie as of this recording next time. So you guys got lucky. You got one extra one coming.
A bonus episode.
But don't worry. A lot of people, you guys who actually are avid listeners, don't worry. We're gonna I'll announce it now at the head of the show. We're gonna give you one extra, and then we're gonna start doing Halloween monster movies. We haven't decided the complete list yet, but next time we will announce kind of a list.
But we're gonna go back to every week.
Every week for I don't know if it's for the month or for the rest of the year. We're debating. We're juggling. We're figuring it out.
That's true.
Right now, focus on Guardians of the Galaxy. Before we do that, a couple ways you can reach out to our show if you like what we do. If you have recommendations for us to watch movies, you can do that. Go to our website, stuffinthingsnetwork.com. Click on the Super Action Bros artwork. You can listen to the show right there on the website. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. You can reach out to us on social media. We have Twitter, so you can send us really long tweets now. Facebook, Tumblr,
double link,
Instagram, and also Letterboxd. You can also reach out to us individually on Twitter. For me, Ian, that's at iRich. That's at IRITCH.
I'm on Twitter too, Ryan Roop, RYANRUPPE.
And you can also email us. There's a contact us form on the very front of the website. Click the button, fill out the form, send us an email, and we will talk about your email here on the show. So all of that at stuffandthingsnetwork.com. So, Ryan.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Guardians 2. This is the only of the latter half of the MCU movies that I saw in the theaters.
Yeah, in the theaters, you're right.
Okay. Yeah.
Now you've almost watched them all.
Yeah, I mean, the last one I saw in theaters before this would have been Age of Voltron.
Right.
I'm wearing that shirt today.
You are.
And then this was the next one I saw, and I didn't plan on seeing this in theaters.
Yeah.
And I was peer pressured into it. Gotcha. Basically,
were you like, no, I want to watch the other ones?
And they were like, yeah, no, it doesn't matter. Just come see this.
Honestly, it really doesn't.
No, you're right. It doesn't.
I mean, I feel like it's not going to matter up until whatever they release the Avengers at Hey, It's Everybody movie, which looks fun.
Yeah, Avengers Infinity.
I'm hoping that during Thor Ragnarok, they show official footage. Ryan and I have seen some bootlegs. But
for some reason,
I'd like to be on the up and up. But because I want people to be able to see it too, and then have their own opinion. But there was some footage we've seen.
It's like that part. It's like that battle scene in Civil War, but more with everybody.
All your favorite
characters.
People who haven't talked to each other before are now best pals.
People don't even know like each other exists.
Yep, that's right. This movie came out. This movie really made me realize, now that we're doing a podcast about it, because it just was released like a month ago.
Yeah. Well, no, it was more than a month.
On home media.
Oh, okay.
Remember when we were kids and you saw a movie and you had to wait like a year for that VHS to come out?
I do remember that, yeah.
And now it's like, 2 months from now, you'll be able to see it. Sometimes I'll hold off like for holiday. I'm a little surprised they released Spider-Man so early. I figured they'd hold off at least until like more closer to Christmas
time. I feel like that's going to happen less and less because people don't buy DVDs.
No, they don't.
Or Blu-rays whatever the 4K thing is going to be.
Yeah. They're called like ultra 4K Blu-rays or something like that. That's like they're still Blu-ray discs.
That name's dumb.
It doesn't matter. People, I don't buy physical media anymore unless there's no other option. For the movie,
or unless
I want.
It's dirt cheap.
Yeah, but most of the time, I'm like, I'm willing to buy the digital version, so I don't have to. I guess I don't like care. A lot of people are like, same thing with video games. A lot of people are like, don't you want your wall of stuff? I'm like, no,
I have enough stuff.
What happens if the power goes out? What do you get? Or like, what happens if you lose everything? I'm like, if Apple's iTunes servers go down and I don't have access to streaming my movies, I think there's a lot bigger problem going on in the world than that.
Yeah. Well, you could always download them on a hard drive.
That's true. I could, but
I guess if their authorization server goes down.
Yeah.
My only problem that I have with digital movies and buying things digitally is when they cost the same as the physical one.
Yeah, I agree with
because
you.
Because
it should be less money.
It costs money to make a DVD and make a DVD case and print out the stuff and then ship it to a store.
Right.
Why is it cost the same amount for me to buy it when I'm saving you all that trouble, Marvel?
But it's the same thing. I'm gonna play devil's advocate here, and argue this one point. Convenience.
No, sure, yeah, but
just like you can order movie tickets from your phone, they charge you a convenience fee.
But that's
it's wrong. I'm not saying it's right.
It's just a slap in the face to you.
It sure is.
That's all it is.
The dumb consumer.
One day there will be a law against convenience fees.
Probably.
Probably not. Actually.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyway. So you saw this in the movie theater. I also saw this in the movie theater.
Not together.
No, this is the second time I've watched this movie.
Just kidding.
And I felt very differently about it the second time I watched it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, let's go back though.
Sure.
How did you feel the first time you watched
it? So the first time I saw this movie, I actually came out of it kind of bummed.
I was okay.
I remember we kind of argued about it.
Yeah.
Because you were like, it was okay. I liked it. And I was like, it was okay. I don't think I ever went as far as saying I didn't like it. God forbid.
But we both came to the same conclusion of I want to watch it again.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I feel like I missed something. Or I feel like maybe now that I know what it is, I'll be better prepared to watch it.
Yeah.
Like
I was going in expecting not Guardians of the Galaxy 2 so much as Guardians of the Galaxy again.
Yeah.
And that is not the movie that it is. No. It is Guardians of the Galaxy 2 Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. It continues. It does what a sequel should do, which is continues what we've learned from the original, and we move forward. We do something different. In fact, they deal with a giant plot point from the first one in this movie. That's kind of the whole thing.
But it's definitely a movie that is much more character focused.
Yes.
Like, we don't see the Guardians battling a newer, bigger threat to the universe. I mean, we do in a sense, but it's not like
it's not the same stakes as, I mean, it is ultimately, it's like universe. It is,
but it's not
stakes,
like just
not,
this unknowable evil bad guy that we've got to stop to save the universe.
Yeah, it's not like,
it's sort of, I mean, you could really say that Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, this time it's personal.
Yeah, I mean, and I it's funny because a lot of people say in the Marvel universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the villains are kind of garbage.
Yeah, I mean, because there's the difference between like an external villain and an internal villain.
Right.
And the first Guardians movie is without question an external villain. It's this bad guy coming down. He wants to do things.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's really an internal villain. Hey, there's this guy that we know. Hey, he's pretty cool. Like, this is great. Oh, wait, hang on a second.
I would say that the villain in this movie, in my opinion, I mean, Loki obviously being the number one because Loki's the one that's in every movie.
Yeah.
And so he's the one that has the most replayability so far. But I would say out of all the Marvel, like, I'm trying to think about this if I really want to say this.
No, I don't think you do because Iron Man's a really good villain.
No, I'm just saying, I think out of all the Marvel villains, this one's definitely a contender for, if not the top three, the top five.
Yeah.
As far as like actually like being a villain that like isn't just lame, like it like he has motivations. It's not just like I am bad, here I am.
He's not just Robert California the robot.
No, he's not I don't like Iron Man or Captain America.
Yeah.
They're bad. So
I'm
gonna
Nazi.
Stop them. Yeah, it's not that. Oh my god, that was okay. There was some movie, I watched this like bad movie review this guy was doing. It was a movie called, straight to VHS movie called Magic Dog.
Oh boy.
And this guy went, the dad in the movie, is like, of course, like any kids movie, like it's almost like a Disney Channel original movie style movie. But he went on this date with this German woman. And in the kids movie, he says something, he refers to her like to his son, like, why'd you set me on a date with that weird Nazi woman? I'm like, whoa, this is a kids movie.
It's not like the word Nazi is a bad word.
No, man. But like, she's just a German woman. There was nothing in the movie that said she was a Nazi. Gotcha. Like, you can't just say that.
Well,
not anymore.
I mean,
maybe there was a seat on the cutting room floor that we all missed. Yeah. But God, we're really getting off topic. But I would say that The villain in this movie, we keep dancing around it. I would say Ego, the Living Planet.
Yeah.
Is
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell is one of the top, so far, one of the top MCU villains. Now, the other one I'm going to say this now. I think the next movie we watch, he's also in my top ones.
Iron Man?
No.
Isn't Iron Man the bad guy in that movie?
No, it's the Vulture. Oh. Although they never call him the Vulture, which is weird.
Well, because it's too cool.
They call him Tombs all the time. But oh, yeah. Michael Keaton's top notch.
That's good. Even in bad movies.
Yes. That movie's
don't watch Birdman. So let's
don't watch Birdman if you're Ryan.
Let's go through the cast and crew like we do. And then we can talk more about Ego, the Living Planet, and stuff like that. Right. So it's actually a lot of the same people, but my understanding is not a lot of the same production people.
Right.
Because a lot of them did Doctor Strange.
Oh, okay.
And so they couldn't do Guardians 2. So James Gunn, same director as the first one. James Gunn, same writer as the first movie. Also, he had to get like a whole new production staff to help him with this movie because all the other guys were working on that other movie. But besides production staff, the cast and crew, we got all the hits are back. Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, the voice of Vin Diesel, the voice of Bradley Cooper, Michael Rooker, Karen Gillan, and then Sean Gunn's back also. Mm-hmm. And then it gets weird. There's a lot of people in this movie.
Yeah, there are some. What?
What?
Steve Agee was in this movie?
Sure, why not?
You know who Steve Agee is?
The name sounds familiar.
He's a comedian.
There are
looks like this. He was on the Sarah Silverman program.
Yeah, there are a ton of cameos in this movie.
Yeah.
It's as if James Gunn was like, hey, look, let's just put everyone in this movie.
Rob Zombie was in this?
Yep.
I'm spoiling all your surprises. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. So one of the actual newcomers in this movie is Pom Clementeef. Mm-hmm. She plays Mantis. It's kind of a weird role, to be honest.
It is a strange role because she is kind of a joke, but at the same time, it's not in like, because here's the thing. There's a lot, I've seen a lot of talk about Mantis and Drax and their like back and forth in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And like, he is straight up mean to her, but like his character is unaware of that. I mean, mind you, the writers are aware of this.
Yeah.
So ultimately you could say, well, that's bad writing. But like, if we're looking at the characters as they are, I don't think it's out of character for him to say the mean things that he says.
Sure.
And I don't think it's out of her character to being the empath to interpret it, but not, she doesn't seem like the kind to get angry. She just kind of like feels emotions and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, she's,
but they do kind of play her for a joke a lot, which is,
yeah,
kind
she's,
of
I mean, she's kind of comic relief and it kind of works. Cause that character is sort of a weird, it's always weird when you have a movie and you decide that any story mm-hmm. where you decide a character is going to be an empath because you've only got really like a couple of options.
Right.
And one of them is like, I feel pain.
Yeah.
Which is, if you've ever watched Star Trek Next Generation.
Right.
Like basically the only thing that, that Lieutenant Troy says ever is, you know, is that, and you know, whenever she's using her empathic abilities, all she ever does is, oh my gosh, someone's in pain. And so that's one option. And then the other option.
Did she ever like one day on the ship just be like, everyone's doing pretty good today?
No, she never does.
Because then there'd be no conflict.
Yeah, because then that whole show is...
What are you feeling? It's almost like none of them have feelings. So they
the rule of Star Trek Next Generation, if we're going to go down that road, is that...
what have I done?
What's his name? Gene Roddenberry was still alive when they were developing the show, and his rule was conflict had to always be external.
Uh-huh.
There was not allowed to be interpersonal conflict as the cause of plot on the show.
Yeah.
He basically forbid it.
And what point, though, does Q become personal versus external?
Now, Q is always external because he's never part of the ship.
But he comes like, on there so many times.
Yeah, but basically the rule is like it can't be, the episode can't be, oh man, Riker and Troy are having drama.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
No, it's got
Riker and Troy can have trauma as like a B plot or like a residual effect.
Or
of,
something's
you know,
possessed
like
somebody. There's
some,
plenty of those where
some
somebody's
weird alien cloud impregnating her
right.
and whatever.
Is that the one with the kid?
Yeah, where the kid grows
name's
up. Yeah,
Ian. Oh, I was
so
like, oh,
weird. But anyway, this obviously
so
is not that.
Bizarre.
But no, I think Mantis is okay. Ultimately, like watching it a second time. Like she really fits and she has You know what she does? You know what she adds to the Guardians of the Galaxy? Optimism.
Yeah.
Because I think in this movie, in the first movie, the optimistic one was Star-Lord.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he sort of loses a lot of that. Yeah. He gets disillusioned.
Yeah.
And so she's there to sort of inject this like, hey, everything's neat. Like,
yeah.
Like not like that everything's going to be okay or sort of the false sense of like everything's great, but just sort of like somebody who's not like, oh, everything sucks. I'm angry right. about everything all the time, which pretty much the rest of the characters are like that.
It's
in this
true. Well, I think this is a good sequel in the sense that the characters grow and change.
Yes.
I mean, really, if we're really going to narrow it down to our who is this story about, who are the main characters in this story, like who does the plot revolve around? It's an A and B plot. A mostly being Star-Lord, and then B is Rocket. Those are the two characters in this yeah. movie.
And there's a very distant C in Nebula and yeah.
And Gamora. But like that's really the
they needed like 15 or 20 more minutes of screen time.
It felt like they went for more the Rocket realizing Rocket plot more so than the
Yondu, I think.
But I think part of the Rocket plot for the most.
Well,
and
yeah.
Yes, and there is that Star-Lord part too. But like a lot of that is those two and realizing like Rocket realizing that he is who he is and he doesn't have like people will like him for who he is. I guess. And a lot of facing like you don't want anybody to care about you and you play aloof like I do. You're mean like me because you don't want anybody to that. That's a really good scene, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it is.
Like hats off to Michael Rooker acting in that
Michael
scene.
Michael Rooker is a good actor. I'm really glad that they used his acting.
Right.
Because I feel like in the last movie, there's just little bits
yeah,
of him.
Right.
And it's sort of like, oh, look, they got Michael Rooker to do a part.
But
in this movie, it's yeah. like he was a part of the main cast.
Well, and that whole, and like, again, I'm watching this scene and I'm getting like really deep and I'm like, this is a blue spaceman talking to a talking raccoon.
Yeah. It's true.
What a weird concept to have this emotional scene about. But like that, I think, is what's great about these movies is they play it straight. They're like, yep, this is normal. This is what it is.
Unlike in Captain America Civil War, people do have hard-to-heart conversations.
They do. They sure do. Ryan, but it's different.
Yeah. No. So let's finish.
This isn't another episode of Avengers. This is the Guardians of the Galaxy we're talking about.
So Kurt Russell.
Yes.
Is Ego, Star-Lord's dad.
I like Kurt Russell in this.
He's good.
He plays it well.
I'm a fan of
Kurt Russell. I am as well. I really like her. I'm trying to think, like, is there anything I have seen personally where I'm like, man, that Kurt Russell was just awful in it. And I can't really think of anything.
Yeah, he was even
Walt
good
Disney was
Fast
right when he
movies.
Wrote his last words, which were Kurt Russell.
What?
You know that?
What?
The last thing Walt Disney ever wrote was the name Kurt Russell.
Why?
Because he was talking about like a movie he was just coming out in. That like one of his first movies, and they're like, "Oh, we got Kurt Russell," and so he wrote something like, I don't know if it was like he's going to be big, like Kurt Russell, like he's important, but he wrote Kurt Russell, circled his name on something, and then shortly thereafter passed away.
Kurt Russell killed him.
He's like, that's the last thing you'll ever say. We talked about it on an episode of Seven Things. There's a whole like weird thing I found out about this, and they like ask Kurt Russell like, "How do you feel about that?" He's like, "What? I'm pretty honored, I guess." Like. You're the last thing Walt Disney ever wrote. Okay.
I got to be honest with you. For a long time, I got Kurt Russell and Patrick Swayze confused.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, I didn't even know
that
they were different people.
Sorry, Patrick Swayze. May you rest in peace, but Kurt Russell's better.
We can talk about sort of the plot elements of Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the insane amount of other people.
Just
in this
list
movie.
The cameos off. Go
so,
for it.
So Sylvester Stallone is not even a cameo. He
no.
has several lines and appears
in
multiple scenes. Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
Rocky himself.
Right.
Elizabeth Debicki plays Aisha, sort of the queen of the.
She's like they gave her a name. It's like they call
Aisha.
Her like the. No, they gave her like
oh,
a title.
Like the sovereign or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, she's like the something wizard of the sovereign or something or
yeah
something.
But she's good. You know, I got her confused with what's her name? Whoever. Kitty from Arrested Development.
Oh, okay.
Like the mom in
yeah.
every action movie in
yes.
2016.
Yeah, she's.
But she's extremely tall.
She's an
Ant-Man. My understanding is basically
she was an Ant-Man.
She. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. But no, but not Elizabeth Debicki.
No.
But Elizabeth Debicki is also really tall, and that's part of why she got this.
She's kind of like a cross between her and Cate Blanchett. Like
I could see that.
You merge them together, and
they and then
go.
And then make them taller.
Yes.
So let's see. Chris Sullivan.
Okay. Let's just get this out of the way. This is the greatest character in the entire world. Not
Taser
really.
Face.
Taser Face. He woke up one. That whole bit is so good. It's dumb, but it's so good. Like, somebody had to sit down, like, what's a name that is super, like, someone who's an idiot would think sounds super cool.
Oh, and it's such a good, so lame. It's such a good running joke, too.
Because it's not even, like, a scary weapon.
No,
it's not. Taser. It's like if someone called themselves Baton Hand. Like, that's not frightening.
Yeah.
No one's scared of Taser Face.
It's true.
Dear Lord. All right. That's all I have to say about Taser Face.
Sure. Oh, Taser Face. So ridiculous.
Let's see. Who else
there's,
we got here?
There's if you look in the list of people who are in movie who are in what do you call them? The Ravagers,
Steve
who are in
AG,
Yondu's Ravagers crew.
Rob
it's
Zombie.
Just like tons and tons and tons and tons of
Seth Green, of course, mini
cameos.
Howard the Duck cameo.
Yeah, right? Except in the movie this time.
Yeah.
Not in the background. Let's see
here. Of course, David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
Very briefly. According to IMDb here, the form of David Hasselhoff.
Michael Rosenbaum, a.k.a. Lex Luthor from Smallville.
Right.
He's one of the the golden alien people.
Ving Rhames.
Yeah.
And Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh. Oh, man. Michelle Yeoh looking a whole lot like Cate Blanchett looks in the Ragnarok.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, I want to know about these other Ravager factions. Tell me more. Like, why is Ving Rhames in here now?
Apparently, Miley Cyrus did the voice of Mainframe in this movie.
Okay.
I don't know why.
And of course, we have our Stan Lee cameo. Honestly, this might be, in my opinion, one of Stan Lee's best cameos,
so
thus confirming a long-standing theory.
More so than being the not only the best Stan Lee cameo, but maybe the ultimate
Stan Lee
cameo, in the sense that it ties every other Stan Lee cameo
together. That time I was a Federal Express delivery man. He's a watch. Well, according to the IMDb, he is the watcher informant.
Well, yeah, he's sitting there in a space suit on the blue area of the moon talking to the watchers.
And if, again, another big character that's like a pretty well known in the Marvel universe. They're like, what? They just threw in.
Yeah.
I feel like James Gunn was like, hey, do we got the rights for the Watchers?
Yeah, I feel like James Gunn just
turned
in. Or
did that go
with
Fantastic Four?
I kind of wonder if James Gunn just turned in like a really long list and was like, I want to use everything here. And hoped that they were just kind of like, okay, whatever. All right, fine. And just handed it back
so
to him
good, though.
With
the
minimal corrections.
Like the Watchers? I remember watching it in the movie theater and going, oh, like that's cool.
Nerds.
I know. I
nerded it out too.
I know. I just had a conversation with a friend about this last night. I was, because we haven't talked in like years and years, and I was telling her like, ever since these Marvel movies came out, now I am the guy who everyone's like, what's going on? Who's that? What's that mean? And I'm like, I like comics, but I don't know everything. Let's watch and find out.
Also, I really think this isn't a cameo. This is just a production thing. The part where they're going through all the different jumps, the way their faces warp and change and stuff. You know why it's so good? There's this ancient Photoshop plugin that Neil Cicierega wrote called Context Aware Scaling that you can use to like do basically exactly what they did on a pixel level. And it's been in memes forever. There's a ton of really good ones where like the Doge dog, like its eyes get really big and shaky. And it's just like they did that with like the production values of a high budget movie.
It's so ridiculous. Rocket just so
that's like this is the thing of this movie. Like we talked about how the main plot of the main arc of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies has become a TV show and it has so many things it has to touch.
Right.
But then the side movies, they're really able to have a lot more freedom with them,
right.
Like the last one we watched, Doctor Strange, mm-hmm. where they could just full on make like, you know, a fun, weird action movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same deal. They're like, we're just gonna like, let's just be ridiculous. Like, why not? We've got the budget. We've got the name recognition.
Right.
This movie could have just been a victory lap.
Yeah.
But instead, it has actually a really solid emotional core.
It does. And I'm going to say this. It's funny. I think the first movie, like, the jokes are really kind of peppered throughout all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's one person in this movie who steals the show joke-wise. All right. I feel it's Drax. I feel Drax has some of the best lines. Mind you, all the jokes in here are not, a lot of them he says are not kid appropriate in any way.
No. Yeah.
But they are funny. I don't care. I won't repeat them here.
It is beautiful. We talked about it every winter solstice.
Like when he talks about his wife too.
Oh yeah. She doesn't dance at all. No, this movie, it's funny, but I think the thing that really, I was prepared for it to be just sort of a funny, almost like another kind of a heist type movie.
Right.
But it isn't. It's really, really like a daddy issues movie.
Yeah. It's funny because I talked to my dad after he watched this. We'll get more. Because my dad was pretty much raised for the most part. Like he knew his my blood grandfather for a long time, but like my grandfather and his and what he considered probably closer to his father would be my grandpa, which is technically his stepdad. Mm. So I wanted to ask him, like, how did this affect you on that level? And I did, because he's like, I watched it, and I was like, did you like? He's like, yeah. He said same thing. I feel like I gotta watch it again. I'm like, all right. Do me a favor. When you do that, tell me how that affects you level. Because I even put myself in that. Oh my God. At the end of this movie, I was bawling. I was bawling. And the first time I saw it, I was like, wow, that's sad. But this time I was like, oh God, it's so sad and beautiful and awesome. But yeah, it was a cry fest.
The movie emotionally really hit me much more the second time.
Yeah.
And it's, why? I wonder why so many people, because I had that instinct too, but I wonder what it is about this movie that made me say, like, nah, I gotta watch it again. Like, and I wonder part of it.
I don't think you expected the emotional
I think it was expectations. I think going into this movie with expectations based on Guardians of the Galaxy 1 is a losing option. You've got to go in with no expectations.
And that's the thing. It's funny because I was talking with Chewie about this, because when it first saw it, he was like, it was okay, like this and that. And I was like, you know why, right? He's like, why? I'm like, because the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 you made in your head is never going to be as good as this. And so it's like, you got to go in there with no expectations and go in there with like, okay, I'm just going to ride this movie out and see what happens. And you know, if you could say, okay, I liked it, or I didn't really like it, but I think when you go in with an expectation like that, like, and after that, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go into this Spider-Man movie with no expectations. And I end up really enjoying it because of that.
Yeah.
And that's a character that resonates a lot with me and my youth and my childhood. Like, it was Batman and Spider-Man. Those are the two. So
speaking of expectations, let's talk about a couple of the incredible action sequences in this movie.
Well, we're jumping around.
We are.
We kind of touched on themes there without meaning to.
Yeah.
MacGuffin wise, is there like a, I mean,
the
universe,
the batteries, the saving the universe, the batteries come up a lot.
Harbulary batteries. That's so good. I love the way he delivers that line later. He says, like, somebody stole Anulak's batteries you didn't need. They're called harbulary batteries. No, they're not. Just the, like, hey, I know what I'm talking about here. Okay. Like just the way that was delivered. Like, Dave Bautista has great comic.
Well,
timing.
You can tell that Dave Bautista has kids, because my kids have totally done that where they like, are sure that it's this thing and they're totally wrong.
Like what your son calls, son call flame broiler?
Yeah, hot grill. I'm like, it's flame broiler, dad.
Or,
no, it's not.
Or Mario Kart, all his was like, hey, can we play 8 Deluxe? You mean Mario Kart? Yeah, 8 Deluxe. That's not the name of the game, son.
I still haven't convinced him. I'm like, what if we played Wii? Well, what game? Mario Kart Wii. Oh, well, do you have 8 Deluxe? Not on the Wii. But yeah, no, Dave Bautista definitely has kids, because it's exactly
right.
Just straight faced. No, it's called hot grill.
It's harbulary batteries. It's not what I said at all.
But yeah, I really think that the MacGuffin is daddy issues.
It really is.
It's coming to terms with who you are and how your father influences that.
Well, it's coming to terms too with like who. There is a lot of like. It's funny because I was trying to think like what other like in the past few years like father son movies have I seen, because I've seen a few mother daughter ones for sure, or sister type movies, like obviously most of them are Disney, like Frozen sister movie, Brave mother daughter movie,
sure, absolutely.
This is the father son movie. I'm like, I haven't seen one like this in a while, so
been some I think Speed Racer's one,
yeah,
that's been a few years,
but that's also like a brother thing. See, that's more of a true family movie, like family.
What
like
if,
this
what
is
if
like
the
a
treasure is the friends you made along the way. That's this movie.
Yes, exactly. But
this is also a postmodern family movie. If we want to talk about that theme.
Yes, absolutely. Which we've talked about many a time.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is definitely continues that.
I guess we could call it Two Guardians, Two Galaxy.
But let's talk about. So that's our MacGuffin. That's our themes. We've talked to death now. Let's talk about the action sequences, though.
All right. In my mind, there's three.
Okay. Three major ones. Four. Okay.
There's opening scene.
Yes.
Which is more of a Groot dance scene.
I really enjoyed that opening. I liked it more the second time. It just made me smile.
I think the first
Anytime you use ELO's Mr. Blue Sky, sure, everyone's going to smile.
It's a great song. The first time I was disappointed by the fact that they focused on Groot instead of the action. Mm-hmm. And the second time around, I'm like, no, this is better.
this is
like,
great.
How many times have I seen, like, oh, let's fight a monster in action sequence? Plenty of times.
I love that move. I love
that. But like, yeah, that's just sort of happening in the background.
I think it's
like a much more clever way to do a scene
I agree, and I just also enjoyed there's that little moment I missed the first time, which is when he's walking around and Gamora's like, Groot, get out of here, you're gonna get hurt, and you just see him go, wait.
Hi. Yeah.
She's like, hi, and then goes on.
Yeah, I like what she yeah, you know what? I think Zoe Saldana has really good comic timing in this movie too.
Yes.
Because she she is really the most, like, one of the most serious characters in the movie. And we can talk about her arc with Nebula. But she's so serious, but there are several moments where she delivers just the perfect joke, like,
right,
perfectly done at the perfect, right, moment.
I don't know what Cheers is.
Yeah, like that, or the group part where, yeah, she's like, hi. And
bye.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that moment too. There's a moment in when they go through the big, like, the big asteroid field thing where they're talking about poop. They're making, yeah, poop jokes. And then she just goes, really? We're in this situation. This is what we're talking about right now. And I just had a moment. I'm like, that's probably what your sister thinks about every day at our job. Really? This is what we're talking about?
Okay. This is what we're talking about right now while we're going through this. This hell, yeah.
it's hard to make this episode family friendly because there's a lot of really kind of potty jokes in this, yeah, movie that are enjoyable.
So that's the first big action sequence. Right. Second one is sort of Rocket ambushing all of the
great,
of the Ravagers, and that's just fun.
Yeah, like, it's just like watching. It's just like traps going off. It's
and
just
it,
like,
also is really silly.
It's like the family friendly superhero version of a Saw movie where no one's getting killed. They're just kidding. We're just watching all these little traps go. I love watching it, and I know it sounds probably dumb, but I liked watching him jump around and skip around the trees like a raccoon. Like,
yeah.
Like, they kind of use that to his advantage in this.
Where he does the raccoon thing. Yeah, but I think the best action sequence in the movie is when, like, fall is immediately after one of the most silly sequences,
right,
which is where they're trying to get Groot to bring Yondu his fin,
mm-hmm,
and it's just so silly.
Oh, man.
But then when they finally bust out of after the Ravagers have mutinied,
yeah,
and they just kill everybody.
Do you have like a refrigerator full of like spare human toes and fingers? No, it's best we just never speak of this again.
Yeah, but so it's funny, but then the scene right after,
right,
especially like it's Yondu's arrow.
Oh man, it's brutal.
Oh, it's so
and
cool.
Just watching the monitors and just seeing it fly around.
Well,
the
and I like
shots,
the way
too.
I like the way they shoot it when they shoot it from
where
top
like
down, where you just
room,
see where
you
just
like
see the red
shooting too,
where, yeah, you just see the red line like, yeah, going through the guys.
Oh,
it's,
man,
like huge body count.
Yeah,
but at the same time, it is so cool.
Yeah,
it is so cool, and it definitely. I think that's one of the ways this movie is unquestionably a sequel is because we just get one scene with him using the arrow in the first movie.
Yeah.
Right,
like,
at
for
the
like
end.
5 seconds.
Like right at the end for 5 seconds. And you're like, dang, that was super cool. And this movie, they're like, look, we're going to give you some more of that thing that was super cool.
Yeah, we're going to give you
a whole scene of it. And it's so cool.
Well, and then there's the big battle.
The final
action sequence.
Well, I paused it too.
The
big
like,
battle.
Okay,
the
how
big,
long is this?
The big ego battle.
It's like 30 to 45 minutes. Like,
well, because a lot happens. Movie. It's a battle with B and C plots happening in the battle.
There's
and,
like,
and,
oh, like where the, when those like little laser balls just cut all the sovereign ships in half.
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, the mining.
Mary Poppins bit's always funny.
Oh, man. That's
is he cool?
My favorite joke.
Yeah, he's cool.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. You know, in the Japanese release, he says, I'm Totoro, y'all.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, yeah. Because Totoro also floats down
that's
on an
cute.
Umbrella.
I like that they actually made it specific for that market. Yeah. That's awesome.
Oh, but I'm Mary Poppins, y'all is my favorite line.
I mean, they're Disney. They could use that. Yeah. Why not? Why not take advantage of that?
It's so funny.
It's really, it's well done. And like the, there's so much going on there too. And I mean, there's also like the, there's a lot of little mini action sequences peppered in, with
the Nebula Gamora fight.
Yeah, that's like, okay, let's talk that actually is okay, good. So good let's segue. Talk about, let's talk about that. Let's talk. We'll real quick. Let's splice up all the plots, but let's go from least effective to most.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Nebula Gamora. Like, look, I get what they were trying to do, but we just like, it's like, time. There's yeah, not enough time to establish
I feel like
this.
They needed another couple of scenes for the Nebula Gamora right. thing. I think also like someone needs to sit Karen Gillan down and say like, hey,
we know you're a robot.
We get that
cyborg.
You're playing a robot person, but like maybe you need to play this a little less one note. Because her one note is I'm angry yeah. all the time. And I could see how you could make an acting choice that like right. this character's angry all the time. It's right. like, okay, sure. Yeah. But I mean, like, also you could say Gamora's character is angry all the time,
right?
But she's got so much more of a range, so much more subtlety in what happens with her acting. And Karen Gillan really just like, I feel like that subplot would have been more effective if she had just shown any emotion at all.
I agree. I think that also too, like, I do like where they at least scratch the surface.
It's also, I mean, to be fair, it's got to be really hard acting in that much like. Her face is blue and silver.
Oh, totally.
And she has a robot hand. Like,
I think that,
there are a lot of things that would make that difficult.
I think too. I like at least what they scratched the surface with it though. I did really enjoy that they were like talking about like, look, you just wanted to win. Like, there's a misunderstanding there of like you wanted to win. I just wanted somebody to be on my team, and you were the only person who could relate to me, and you chose to just try to win and fight every day. And Gamora probably never thought about it that way. She just went, look, like I was trying to stay alive too, just like you.
Well, and so that's neither of us have had empathy for each other because you wanted me to help you, but put yourself in my shoes. You were also trying to stay alive.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you're right. I never looked at it that way from your sense. I just looked at it from my perspective.
Right.
And they get there.
They get there. But I feel like there should have been some more. I feel like there could have been some more time devoted to that. And maybe in the next installment or maybe in whatever Avengers thing they'll play on that. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, because Thanos seems to be pretty big deal in that Avengers movie.
Yeah. And so. They seem to, you know him pretty good.
Yeah. So we'll see. But also on the other, so that plot, like it's not done super well, but it
works. There's a lot more of it than there was in the first movie, right. which was one of the things that was lacking in the first movie. But it just isn't as satisfying. It doesn't fully work and it doesn't get a lot of time to work. It gets three, maybe four scenes.
Right. The other one, the second one, the Rocket subplot.
Yeah.
The Rocket plot, which is about Rocket Raccoon just being a jerk to everybody.
Yeah, it's sort of like humanizing, haha, joke.
Yeah.
Humanizing Rocket.
Well, and I think at the beginning of it, he's very much like, no one's going to like me for who I am, so the best thing to do is push everyone away because that's what's going to happen anyway, rather than giving people a chance to maybe like you for
who you
are. Well,
I think also that, but the like, oh, it feels like I'm becoming closer with this people. I better start pushing away now so I'm not hurt if they push me away.
Right, exactly. It's one of those defense mechanisms. And so much so, I think it comes to the head at the point with Yondu, which is when he has that, like, I know what you're doing. I know what you've been through because I am you and I do the same thing you do. And it's like, that's how I know who you are. And I'll stress again, that scene is really well acted. And if you really take a step back, it's kind of like when you watch the opening of Up and you're crying and you're like, those aren't real people. These are ones and zeros.
Yeah.
Not even cartoon characters. They're ones and zeros. They're digital data. People. And I'm like, and when you really take a step back, you're like, this is a blue space alien man talking to a talking raccoon, but I'm so emotionally invested that I feel for these two. And then there's ultimately the big one, the Star-Lord dad plot.
Yeah. Which Star-Lord finds his bio dad.
Yeah, he finds his biological father, and his biological father turns out to be a jerk. That moment, too. Oh, man. That
moment
is...
And, like, his biological father is stoked, and they have a moment. They literally play catch.
It's, come on, that's cute.
No, yeah, but at the same time, it's like, come on.
Really?
But
I can control the light? I'm going to make some weird stuff. I'll say stuff, but it's just that moment of like there's a really good, actually I saw a really good kind of a different perspective on this movie. There's a girl, she does, she used to do like a lot of reviews. She has a lot of film criticism on YouTube named Lindsay Ellis. She did a really good, kind of thing about like the feels in this movie and why, and like a lot about Star-Lord being like very immature and like becoming more mature by the end of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And following that archetype of like, you know, I've seen media in which there's a will they, won't they like tension between why don't we have that? And it's like, well, because that's not how people work.
Yeah.
Dummy. Like, so it's some really interesting. I would say check that out if you're on YouTube. I like shouting at people that I like. So I would check her out. She does some good stuff. She also does some really deep dives on the Transformers movies.
Oh, really?
Well, that was where I told you, like, yes, Michael Bay doesn't clearly respect women, but he also clearly doesn't respect men or think very highly of them because they're all just dumb idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just, it's very, very clear.
Michael Bay hates everyone.
Michael Bay doesn't like humanity. Robots. But anyway, getting back to it, but like that is, yeah, they do literally play catch. But that moment where like he's just like, I really loved your mother. It's a shame I had to put that tumor in her head. I was like, oh man. Like, and you kind of knew it was coming, but no, like,
yeah, like, well, I mean, and you didn't. The movie like gives you enough to feel like, okay, something's not right.
Right here.
And I mean, you can, and it's funny having seen this, watching it a second time, knowing what's coming.
Right.
It's like, everything that he says beforehand is rendered creepy by knowing what's going to happen.
Right.
And you, the second time through, you realize like, oh no, like he's a creep show from the start.
Yeah.
And like, even down to the, like, the playing catch thing, it feels really contrived. And the second time you're like, oh no, he's contriving it. It feels contrived because that's exactly what his character would do in this moment.
Oh, manipulate. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it works really well. It works really well a second time because it's not a twist, and then you see all the support for the twist.
Right.
I feel like a good twist is a surprise the first time, and the second time you're like, oh man, how did I not see this coming?
Right.
I feel like that is a good twist in a movie or a TV show, is when you watch it a second time, you're like, dude, they told me from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this movie does that.
I feel
like that's a successful twist when he does that face heel turn and turns out he's a bad guy.
Yeah. I also think too, like, how do I put this?
Did you notice while you're thinking about that?
Yeah.
Mantis, the reason she is in the movie.
Yes.
Is because, or the reason her character is there is because her character is able to put Ego to sleep.
Yeah.
Because and she says it and it's really brief and her accent makes it a little hard to understand because he's thinking about his progeny. In other words, like the horrors of the amount of his own children that he has murdered are the thing that keeps him from being able to rest.
Right.
And she's there to help him forget about it. But and they like that's in the first scene where you introduce him.
Exactly. I mean, you know, something's off from the beginning there, but that moment just like really, and like the way he just snaps out of it and like doesn't even hesitate. He just grabs gun, starts firing.
Yeah.
Like that's well done. Like there wasn't that moment of like, I'm going to monologue and explain why it was okay. It's like, nope, done.
Yeah. Screw this.
I love that moment of like,
well, and I think it's very appropriate with Star-Lord's character is that impulsive, like
nope. Anything involving his mom. It's like, nope. It's like, you did this? Oh, okay. You're the one I've hated all my life.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And then there's that moment toward that. Then there's the moment, the moment. I guess we can talk about the fight scene between all of them when they're becoming giant rock,
which
guys
is totally ridiculous and over the top and looks insane.
Yeah, it
looks so weird and
it
good.
Does. It's
actually
really
this movie in general, like they really pushed it to look as weird as they could.
Yeah.
And it is awesome.
Yeah.
I really like that they made it really weird. It's not everything's just brown and gray.
No.
Like you see in a lot of space movies and science fiction movies.
It's brightly colored.
Everything's candy colored and just weird.
I remember what I was going to say. I also really like, I mean, as it is before with the first one, the use of music in this movie is really well done.
Oh, yeah.
And the way they take that Looking Glass song and they make it like such a relevant plot point. It's funny because I was listening to the soundtrack before the movie came out. I'm like, I think I know how they're going to use this song.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, makes sense.
My favorite musical cue is the George Harrison, My Sweet Lord.
Oh, it's great.
When they're touring Ego's Planet for the first time.
It's so well
done.
And
he turns around and he's all backlit and sun-drenched. And it's all, My sweet Lord.
All of the songs are so well selected. And I think too, like the, oh man, that Cat Stevens song though. I hear that song everywhere now.
Yeah.
I'm just like, it's like everyone trying to cry all the time right now. like really? But yeah, spoiler alert. Yondu
doesn't make it out of the movie.
No, yeah. But man, oh man, what
sacrifices
a way to go.
Himself.
Sacrifices himself. You know, he is more of a father. That line is so good. He may have been your father, but he ain't your daddy. I am the one who took care of you. I'm the one who raised you. Not, but not in a way of like, so, you know, he's like, this guy doesn't love you. I love you. And this is how I'm going to show it. And like, maybe I was a bat. Maybe I love that part. Sorry. Oh, that was the part. That part got me good. But the part of, sorry, I didn't do any of it right. It's like,
yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh, and you buy Chris Pratt's reaction so well. Cause it's like, it's just incomprehensible scream crying where it's like a child throwing a fit. Like, just like you're not sure,
like he's not sure realizes, if you're
like laughing or crying or screaming, or it's
at the same moment he realizes, no, you're right, you are my dad,
right,
and you're dying,
yeah,
like it, all at once, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, there's nothing I can do about it.
Oh man, it's yeah, it's good.
And that, oh man, that eulogy is so good, because it is like, if you've ever been to a funeral, that's kind of how they are sometimes. Like, it's hard to like sum up someone's life, unsubjectively, like to be like, this is what he was. And the way he does it is just like, you know, Yondu may not have been this, may not have had a talking car, but he did have, you know, he did have a flying arrow, and maybe he didn't have the voice of an angel, but he sure had the whistle of one. And I guess he was like David. I guess David Hasselhoff turned out to be my dad after all.
Aww.
That's so heartbreaking too. And he's like, yeah, I always tell kids that David Hasselhoff was my dad.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that part's. Yeah, I kept the picture of him in my wallet.
Oh,
you
man.
You poor sucker.
You poor sucker. And like, and he's like, yeah, I guess they did. I guess they went. They both ended up going on kick-ass adventures. I was like, but it's like such a real, like, it's hard to do that. Like, I didn't do that, like a eulogy per se, but like, I got up at my grandfather's funeral and spoke about him, and it's not easy. Me and my dad both did. And it got to the point where I was trying to write something and I couldn't think of anything to write. Yeah, and you just have to kind of go up there and in the moment think of what this person meant to you. And it's hard. It's really difficult. So like, I applaud them for making that funny, but also heartfelt.
Yeah.
Like, that could have gotten real heavy, real fast. And it was heavy, but in such a way that's like, this is how that he would come to that realization that I guess the thing that you're really looking for is right there all along. It's oh man, whoa. I'm gonna get sad.
It's good. It's a good movie. It's emotionally satisfying. Really, the second Captain time around, it really ties it up in a nice bow for you. The
Captain got this for you. It's what they're listening to on Earth now.
It's Gazoon.
300 songs.
300
songs.
Oh man.
See now. That's a joke for you kids. Yeah, now seriously. It's like that's like back then I would have been like, whoa.
I got a million songs in my fingertips. Yeah, more exactly.
At any given moment. But yeah, and the whole ending of this movie is great too. That moment, even the moment with Rocket,
the
too, like
funeral,
they still I'm getting emotional now. They still came. It's like, even though he was a jerk,
yep,
and he stole batteries that he didn't need. And they're like, oh yeah, of course. It's like, it's that moment of like, yeah, dude, we know you're a jerk, but we still love you anyway. It's okay. We're not gonna get rid of you because of who you are.
Yeah.
Like, if we wanted to do that, we wouldn't be here. Like, mm-hmm. And just ends on that little raccoon crying.
Aww.
That's how the movie ends.
And then there's
how this summer blockbuster action movie ends, on the most emotional note.
And then with disco credits.
Yeah, with disco credits.
And yeah, and then there's like five after credit scenes. One of them seeds. Adam Warlock, boom, there's this cocoon. You guys were asking for it. Here it is.
It is.
She even says, I'll call him Adam.
I love that. I am Groot.
Yeah, Groot. Sassy teenage Groot.
Oh,
was
man,
really
I
good.
That. I love that. You know, I've shot spaceships for real. There's like a reel of like alternate lines that he said. Yeah. They're just so good.
Chris Pratt's a funny guy. Did you see on Twitter, Chris Pratt took a Which Chris Are You? And he got Chris Evans. And he said, I'm not good at these online quizzes.
He's a stand-up dude, man. They were even trying to, like, people were trying to get him to be like, oh, did you see Anna Faris on, like, did you see her win that thing on the Emmys? He's like, yeah, she did a good job.
Yeah.
I don't think they hate each other. I just think it's like, hey, we just aren't, this isn't working anymore.
It's sad, but yeah.
It's sad, but like, he's a cool adult about it. Like, good for you, class act.
Maybe he's kind of like a grown-up.
class act. So, and then there was the Stanley. Where are you guys going? Don't. Jeez.
Yeah. I think it's just odd.
When Stan Lee was Morty for a second.
Yeah.
But yeah, I overall watching it again a second time, I enjoyed it a lot more than I did the first time I watched it. Is it as good as the first one? No, but it's different.
One wouldn't exist without the first one.
No, and it's a continuing story, like sequel should be.
Yeah.
Something that continues the story on in a different direction.
But this one really hits more emotional points than the first
absolutely,
one.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In the first one, we see, you know, Peter take my hand and he sees his dead mother. This is like even hits more emotional beats than that.
This hits more emotional beats in the first 10 minutes than that one does.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Well, so what would you say your rating is? Making you do it first.
Out of 10?
Yeah, out of 10.
Let's see. I'll probably give it a 7.
Yeah?
7 or an 8. Probably. I'll give it a 7.5. I'll stick in the middle there. Like, I really enjoyed the emotional beats. I wish there was a little more of the comic charm from the first one. There's a lot of funny jokes in there. I did feel when watching it, and this is weird, maybe it's just me becoming older, I was like, there's a lot of potty jokes and pee-pee humor for like a movie that is rated PG-13. Like, not that I'm like, there are people who be like, oh, Guardians, I took my kid to see the first one, I'll go see this. And like, some of the jokes, arguably a lot of them probably would have gone over their heads, but there's a couple that I'm like, that's pretty on the nose.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, asking about Kurt Russell's anatomy
bit.
I was like, it's funny. It's great. I think it's funny, but I'm like, Disney's okay with this? Like, we're fine with this?
Yeah,
like,
it's PG-13.
I guess. Like, but I don't hear Jack Sparrow making jokes like that.
It's a different demographic,
I guess. But no, I enjoyed it. I still did really like it a lot. I think it's a good sequel. It's probably one of the, looking back at it now, it's probably one of the better Marvel sequels, in my opinion. So yeah. I'd say I'll give it an 8. I'll round it up. I'll give it an 8. But 8 what's? Forget it. I'll do it 8, presumably Groot nod off big toes out of 10. Presumably.
That's good. I think... I liked it a lot the second time. I again forgot to check that spreadsheet to see if I'm being consistent with my ratings. I'm not.
You never are.
But I feel like this is one of the top tier of the Marvel movies.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I want to give it maybe like an 8 and a half. Nah, you know, let's go with an 8. 8 okay. Sounds good. 8's a good number.
8 what?
8 replacement mohawks that connect to your brain.
out of 10, and unlike all the Marvel movies,
this is absolutely a blockbuster.
Watch it.
I mean honestly watch it twice.
Yeah,
watch it twice with some time in between.
Right,
it's agreed. Really gonna pay off the second time.
Agreed. So that is the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 portion of our show. But now we're going to back at the ranch a little bit, kind of talk about some different things. I saw the second Kingsman movie.
Oh yeah, how was that? I read somewhere that the director actually didn't want you to know that Colin Firth comes back.
Really?
Apparently.
Yeah, speaking of another dad figure movie, it is a lot of dad. There's a lot of dad figure feels in this movie, with Eggsy kind of being like, kind of having to come to terms with the fact that like, oh, this guy may be lost, and and then they find him and they do the thing that every movie does. I'm going to spoil a little bit for you.
Okay.
They do the thing every movie does. He doesn't remember who he is.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
But that changes.
Yeah, obviously.
I was really glad that I would recommend this. If and when you get around to watching it, watch the first one before as a refresher, because sure. I forgot. But like a lot of elements, I was like, oh, yeah, that happened. Good thing I watched it 20 minutes before coming here.
Okay.
Like,
so it's a movie that pays off more if you've watched the
absolutely. From the first moment of the movie, absolutely. The action sequences in there are fun and ridiculous.
Yeah,
like somebody said that the first one is Sean Connery James Bond like love letter. This is Roger Moore James Bond love letter, for better or worse. Like the gadgets are wacky. There are robots. Elton John's in the movie.
Channing Tatum.
Yeah, Channing Tatum is. I will say Channing Tatum was criminally under.
Really? That's disappointing. Yeah. Human golden retriever?
But the other dude in there was pretty good. Yeah, the Statesman was fun and stupid and ridiculous.
That's what I'd hope.
But is it as good as the first one? I don't think so, because I don't think anybody expected that much from the first one.
Okay, this one has the expectations problem.
That being said, I think that this is a good like additional thing. It's like a good, this thing.
Oh, okay.
It's getting a lot of poor reviews, but if you like the first one, if you enjoyed it and you go in with that expectation, I think you'll be okay with it. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I've been thinking about reviews for action movies for a long time, obviously.
This action scenes in this are really good.
But I think that, like, especially for movies like sequels or movies where there's a lot of expectations, like a Fantastic Four or something like that, like, reviews are tend to be, if the movie's not amazing, reviews tend to be really bad, even when the movie's not awful.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the first one, and I like the vibe for the second one. There are some good callbacks to the first movie that are really nice. Funny. That, like, if you watch the first one, you're like, oh, I see what they did there. Mm. But yeah, there's some stuff happens. Some heavy business.
Oh boy.
But it's good though. I wouldn't say rush out and go see it. But when it comes out, we'll watch it here on the show.
All right.
We'll watch it here on the show. Right. I'll make a point of it. Other than that, I haven't really seen any other, like, action movies.
I saw some trailers. I saw the trailer for Tomb Raider?
Tomb Raider?
Looks
fun.
It looks really good, actually. Yeah. It looks really a lot of fun.
I'm kind of into it.
It really looks like they, took that Indiana Jones National Treasure framework and they just sort of... made it for 2017.
Yeah.
And
well, it's more based on the newer.
Well, yeah, it looks like there's lots of puzzle solving and
the newer games
figuring
too,
stuff out.
The newer games too, she is not what she was originally designed to be, which is like
running and shooting.
Sorry, no, I'm gonna be a little crass here. Big boob.
Oh yeah,
like this one treats her like a character.
Sure.
And like she's heaven forbid,
a
person.
She's got a character in the first Lara Croft movie.
No, the movies are good, but those are based off source material where it's like, look at the big boob girl shoot guns. This one is
guns
the newer
jumping.
Games have like actual like story plot elements and Lara Croft is like a character that's respected and not just like. Hmm. Look at the girl in the shorts running around. There's more to it.
Nice.
Because I haven't actually played a lot of the new games, but I know my roommate Matt has. I think Square does them now too, which is interesting. So
yeah, I mean, just the trailer shows all these different puzzles, and I'm like, I'm into this. I love that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I saw a trailer for a movie called Annihilation, which is the most generic title you can give a movie, as far as I can tell. Just a terrible title. But it's based on a book called Annihilation, which is part of the Southern Reach trilogy.
Okay.
So this is a movie starring Natalie Portman, and it's directed and written, or at least adapted, by the guy who made Ex Machina. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, but I heard it's really good.
It's pretty good.
And so
pretty
the trailer looks insane.
It's dark though.
It looks like this sort of weird psychological body horror situation with maybe aliens, but you don't really know. The trailer looks nuts. It looks like man, I want to see that movie.
Yeah.
Because I just, what is even happening?
Not an action movie, but another movie I saw a trailer for that I am kind of, had no idea about this movie, but I'm really excited about it. I can't, the name is slipping me now.
Tell me about it.
It's about, it's not an action movie in any way, but it's kind of involves the mob, I'm guessing.
Okay.
But it has Matt Damon in it.
I know
it's called, what's it called? It takes place in a planned community, and there's like all these like murders start happening. Suburbicon is what it's called.
Okay, I heard something about this.
It is written by the Coen brothers
and directed by George Clooney. Yeah, it looks weird.
I have seen movies that George Clooney has directed, and they're usually pretty good.
Oh yeah, he made Minister at Goats, right?
Did he do that one? I know he did Good Night and Good Luck. That's one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He did, and another one that I love that no one has ever seen this movie, but I think it's really good, and I think it really shows off. God, why can't I think of the guy's name? He's in the MCU. Oh God, why can't I think of his name? The actor. It's bothering me. I'm gonna. He's the bad guy in Iron Man 2.
Mickey Rourke.
No, the other.
Oh, Justin Hammer.
No, yeah, but what's the actor's name? We both know it. What's his name?
I can't.
Let's do this old school. Try to remember it.
He's in Ninja Turtles. in Moon. He's in the movie
Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell.
It's Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
That movie
is so good, and it surely shows that he's, because like that to me is a movie where I'm like, this guy's an actor. Like, this guy's a really good actor. So I am kind of stoked about it. I had no idea about it, and it looks like a Coen Brothers movie, but also has this weird kind of humor to it. It looks good. It looks really, really good.
I just see the trailer for.
I love when Matt Damon plays like a twerp. Which you don't really see very often.
He plays a good twerp.
Yeah.
Did you see the trailer for The Foreigner?
No.
It's basically Jackie Chan Taken.
Oh, okay. Hey, did you hear anything about that Lego Ninjago movie?
Jackie Chan taken. I'm not done thinking about it. Okay. But it's Jackie Chan is an older dude now, and he looks older in the movie, mm-hmm. but he still does Jackie Chan stuff.
Oh, that reminds me. There's another Liam Neeson movie coming out where he's on a commuter train.
Oh, yeah. And commuter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is disappointing. No one's done anything.
Skills.
No one's done anything to his family in this movie.
What?
It's all about him. And being in trouble.
So I heard the Lego Ninjago movie is all right.
Okay.
Ninjago is actually good. Like, it's a ridiculous CG Lego television show right. that you can watch all seven
is
or
this
eight
like,
seasons
I mean,
of
I'm
it
sure
on
it's
Netflix.
Based on it, but like, it doesn't require a lot of previous knowledge to enjoy this movie?
It seems to be sort of like a sort
alternate
of like
universe.
A reboot.
Oh, okay.
Like they're just sort of redoing it, but it's all the same characters and everything
Right.
But I mean, like, this is a TV show where at one point in like the third season, one of the characters figures out he's a robot.
Okay.
And there's this massive emotional scene in a children's cartoon show right. where this Lego is like, man, I might be a robot.
This toy.
And then he tells his friends and they're like, huh, really? And that's it.
All right.
I saw the trailer for The Isle of Dogs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The new Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah. It looks like another Wes Anderson animated movie.
All right.
hey, last one. Have you heard of the movie Blade of the Immortal?
I've heard of it, but
it is a Japanese movie. It's directed by Takashi Miike.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a samurai
Kay.
Who can't die.
Okay.
He's not stoked about it.
All right.
But he uses that to kill a lot of people.
Oh, I understand. Okay. That sounds pretty great.
Yeah. He's cursed with immortality.
Uh-huh.
And to free himself of this immortality curse, he has to kill 1,000 evil men.
That sounds pretty great.
It sounds amazing.
Oh, by the way, they've officially confirmed 2019 John Wick 3. You haven't seen John Wick Part 2.
No.
We'll have to remedy that soon.
Well, maybe we'll just have a sequel month
once we
get this whole thing going.
John Wick Part 2 is
and we'll watch Kingsman good. 2 and John Wick 2 and Fast and Furious 8 and I don't know what else.
All the ones we haven't seen.
All the ones we haven't seen. All right. Well, that's the show.
Yeah, that's the show. So we're almost done. One more, Ryan. We got
one
to sneak
more.
One last one in. If you have the ability to purchase a digital movie, you can join in with us. Otherwise, you have to wait till October 17th because we're going to wrap up the SAB MCU month with the first technical, I would say, company crossover.
Yeah.
Where somebody made some deals and they made a whole movie about this character and tied it in. It wasn't just a cameo. Now
what?
It's all about him. We're going to watch Spider-Man Homecoming.
That's amazing.
And I'm going to say right now, the best Spider-Man movie.
Wow. All right. Well, that's some big talk.
Ryan, you're going to care so much
we'll
about
see what
Peter
happens,
Parker's
how
problems.
How much I care about Spider-Man.
He doesn't have any girl problems in this movie. Rami kind of does. He kind of does, but not in like a, not in the same Mary Jane's been my neighbor since I... No, it's not that. It's not that bit. It's not like that. Or
pizza time.
There's no pizza time.
Oh, it's disappointing.
Anyway, so all right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Come back next time. We're finally going to wrap up SAB MCU with Spider-Man Homecoming. And remember...
Whether it's blockbuster...
Or lackluster...
We're the Super Action Bros.
This has been a production of the Stuff and Things Podcast Network.
Exclusively at stuffandthingsnetwork.com.